Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. I am here. It's your girl, Jacqueline, Mr. Mark Ellis. We are both fresh off of the Big Apple.
The
it was good.
Big Apple. We had very different accommodations. Mine were fine. I enjoyed my hotel just dandy. But then when I heard where Jacqueline was staying, I try not to get jealous of people. I'm pretty good at staying, within myself and not being envious and not coveting others' possessions.
Oh,
but
man.
When you're staying in a hotel that Jacqueline was staying at, I couldn't help but ask many, many, many follow-up questions. This is the dream hotel I've always wanted to be at.
This is so funny. So Mark and I were both in New York for a New York Comic Con. He was doing stand-up. I was up there moderating the Blumfest panel with Universal. And they put me up. And this is the thing. Like, I don't know what hotel I'm going to. They send me an itinerary. They tell me where to go.
I would have known from the address. I've studied this place.
But I got to be in the Hudson Yards Equinox Hotel, which Mark is a member of the Equinox Gym.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not.
Okay, I want to get the take of Cinema Joe here. He's our special guest. You know him from the House of Cinema podcast. You can follow him on social media. Huge channels. You see him on TikTok all the time. Cinema Joe, the nicest place you've ever stayed. The nicest hotel you've ever been in.
Not the Hudson Yard, I'll tell you that
the
much.
The Equinox, that's legendary status.
Which, by the way, I felt so bad. I was like, listen, I know we're about to go on this tangent, but I forgot he had set this up already. Like, he told me,
it's been at the forefront of my brain ever since I found out.
Because, again, it meant a lot more to him.
Yeah.
But no, Joe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course,
thank you for listening to my Equinox rant. I felt so bad for him. Just like, let me tell you about what me and Mark basically had an entire... I wouldn't say drink conversation about, but you were just floored.
We were having a beverage and talking about it. I feel like Cinema Joe's at least done like a Four Seasons.
Yeah. There's been a couple nice hotels in New York I went to.
What's your favorite New York hotel?
Oh, I couldn't tell. I've been to New York twice in my life.
Oh, okay.
It was, there on courtesy of someone else's dime. They put me there. And it was very nice.
Minute.
If you want to go stay at Equinox, you and I can split it.
Yeah, we can do that. You have guest passes.
There. Like, honestly, now that I think that I've been there, you're going to have to be there just so you could say you could also have been there. And the legend of Mark Ellis will continue. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Our movie today is the 1985 classic. Not the Tom Hardy movie that it gets confused with nowadays, but the 1985 Ridley Scott starring Tom Cruise, epic fantasy tale, legend. It is our film today that Rotten Tomatoes wants to say is wrong. It is ranked as the 35 best of the 80s fantasy movies. That is despite the 42% rotten score, but the 73% audience score, which I think is a little bit more accurate. The number one movie off of that one is The Princess Bride, to give you an idea of sort of the stuff that folks are interested in that. It's also included in our book, Rotten Movies We Love, under not their best work, or so they've said. This is definitely the one that Ridley Scott doesn't necessarily go behind. There's so much to go about that. Mark, sir, I'm going to start with you, Cinema Joe. What's your history a little bit with legend? Like, I have to know a little bit. Is this a movie you had a particular affinity for?
I went through a phase my childhood where I was watching a lot of fantasy, like a lot of people did, a lot of medieval, a lot of fantastical movies. Legend was in the run of movies I would watch and revisit, but probably on the bottom half of the list of movies I'd watch and revisit. Now, there's some other movies I would constantly watch and that came out around the same time. Princess Bride, as you mentioned earlier, was number one. It's fantasy. It's not the same, though. I don't think it's the same.
Sword and sandal. It's like the sword and sandal type vibes, as I like to say, you know what I mean? Where there may be dragons, but there's definitely like warriors and knights.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I felt like I was in the same world watching this movie, which I just came to last night. I'd never seen it before.
Wow. Really?
So I'm coming to this movie and like I see the world it takes place in, and I can see another continent in this on this planet where you're going to have like the medieval King Arthur kind of stuff going on. And then maybe you have like the Land Before Time somewhere else. And you have what my fantasy movie that I grew up watching in my rotation, which unfortunately is at the very bottom of our Rotten Tomatoes list, the 35 best 1980s fantasy movies, Caravan of Courage and Ewok Adventure.
Wow.
That was one. I was a big Star Wars kid, but the two Ewok movies, solid rotation. They got solid airtime.
That was
at
age
the Ellis
appropriate.
Residence.
That was very age appropriate.
It was
for
more
you.
Battle for Endor, less Caravan of Courage. But Caravan of Courage sounds. Caravan of Courage just doesn't. The name doesn't sound as exciting as Battle for Ewok's Battle for Endor is like, oh my god, that's the place from Return of the Jedi. We got to protect it at all costs. Caravan of Courage sounds like we're getting the family into the minivan and we're going to go to grandma's house. It doesn't sound as like dangerous.
You know what? And you need danger for you to feel like you're really in this genre.
I want my Ewoks to be in a little bit of, not a lot, a little bit of peril.
And this is one of those movies that I will say, this was part of that like scary fantasy movie. This was like, you know, a little never ending story for me when I caught it. And obviously not specific to the time frame because literally I think I was two. But the movie itself was a part of that, you know, Return to Oz, definitely the Neverending Story, Secret of the Nim, all of those sort of like fantasy, scary-ish kids movies that you still really wanted to watch. And so I would appreciate it, Mark, if you could take, I want you to make sure you appreciate how scary this movie is. Because they're like killing stuff in the first opening scene.
Well, that's why I'm glad I didn't see it as a kid like Joe did. Because I think a lot of the darkness sort of stuff and like the Minions of Darkness would have actually like scared the crap out of me. Mm. It's one of the big qualities of this movie is how imposing our villainous presences look.
Yes. Yeah, so if you don't mind, sir, give us exactly what the villainous presence was in this one. And there's so many. We haven't even tipped the iceberg of the names, dates, and events of this one. So please, let's find out what happens.
No, so you have this demon known as Darkness. The Darkness, not the fun rock band from the early 2000s. It's still going strong. Tim Curry playing Darkness, an unrecognizable Tim Curry, unless you really know Tim's voice, which obviously a lot of us do now. That's sort of the villainous presence counteracted by all these wonderful unicorns. That at least there's a couple running around.
Two.
And they're the keepers of light, and they have it within themselves. And so as long as the unicorns maintain the breathing, and then they don't go to the glue factory, then good. Then we have a balance in the world. Unfortunately, now we got some human-ish interaction with the unicorns, and that kind of offsets our action where, uh-oh, we got to protect the unicorns. Now we might have gone too far, thanks to the princess played by Mia Sara and the forest boy known as Jack. Kind of a Mowgli situation a little bit. He just kind of seems to make his home outdoors.
Yep.
And we have some elves that come in and chime in. We have a lot going on in here. But basically, we have to raise an army full of elves, and we have to stop Darkness from killing the last unicorn. Because then the world's going to be an eternal night. And as much as you and I enjoy the city that never sleeps, occasionally you do want to see the sun come up. So it's stopping darkness. It's stopping evil from taking over. And more importantly, Jack, I think he's really sweet on this Lily girl played by Mia Sara.
Played by Mia Sara from Ferris Bueller's fame. Thank you, Mark.
And Time Cop. She's great in Time Cop.
She's also great in Time Cop. Definitely one of the it girls of the 80s. Thank you so much for that synopsis. Cinema Joe, sir, if you don't mind, I would love for you to kick it off and tell me whether or not you think the 42% of Rotten Tomatoes is wrong.
Is the 42% wrong? Absolutely, it's wrong.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, now I'm not saying we need to bump it up to 80s or 90s.
See, I am. But we'll get there.
70s, I think 70s is a perfectly appropriate place. I do think this movie was swallowed up by the wave of fantastical movies that came out in the 80s. You know, the Willows, the Dark Crystals, the Neverending Stories. Yep. Those are more explicitly fantasy, a little bit more lighthearted, more fun. This one is definitely more abstract, a little bit more.
But all those, except for Dark Crystal, I think got rotten scores too. I know Willow's in our book.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, see, but Willow has a great following. They made a sequel. Dark Crystal got a sequel. Legend? I don't see a Legend sequel happening anytime soon.
I don't think you're going to see a Legend sequel anytime soon. But I think Joe hit on a key word there that's going to be a recurring theme when we get into movie talking. It's the abstract nature of the storytelling, I think, really detracted from me. So for me, I think Rotten Tomatoes nailed it, baby.
Wow.
This movie is also in the book Rotten Movies We Love, and it was 36% of the tomato meter back when the book was published. Now it's crawled up to 42%, and I'm just here saying, all right, let's just pump the brakes on that upgrade. I think it's right at home with the late 30s, early 40s kind of rating. I did not grab by this movie.
I am not going to lie to you. Now, maybe it's that we live in California, and I got to enjoy certain things the last time I got to see this. That's all I will say. I actually recently saw this. They had one of these rep screenings at the Beverly. I saw maybe like 2 months ago. So I saw it on a theater screen. It was amazing. I loved it. I may have been enjoying the fact that I live in California and things are legal. It's awesome. I love this movie so much. And I'm going to go ahead and say it now. I waited. I have a tattoo. Not quite completely finished. This is the part of this tattoo that I don't like to talk about, is my very nice Austin tattoo guy that I got right at the beginning of the pandemic to like start this for me. I have not been able to get back to like sit in his chair because you have to like get on a plane afterwards. It's a lot more like whatever. So, but I do have a tattoo of this movie on here, and it is of the girl dancing in this movie. It is her.
Really?
It is her dress in a ball. God. Yeah.
So it's not Tim Curry. The ball.
No. Okay. It's just got his fingers. Got his fingers. And that's the part that's not finished, is his fingers. She and the ball are finished, and then it's just like open for where the fingers are going to be. I got to get the fingers in there.
I feel like some of the best tattoo stories start with, it's not finished yet.
It isn't. It's like you got to sit for like 3 days. Like the ball is finished.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
It's not just a college mascot.
No, it really isn't. And it's like 10 hours each session, like, or 6 hours really. But
I had no idea that I've known you for years. I had no idea that you had as many tattoos as you actually have. But also I had no idea that Legend was one of them.
Legend is one of them. Yeah, there was three movies I felt strong enough that I wanted on my body, and this was one of them. I love this movie.
It
so
seems
much.
Like you side with Joe, maybe even more violently than Joe.
Oh, way more than him. I would definitely put this above Certified Fresh. I love this movie. It is mystical. It is wonderful. I definitely appreciate some of the warts of it, but it's so lyrical. It's about this fable of good versus evil and balance. I mean, when I look at some of the movies that were successful of this time, I don't know how you could look at this one and be like, this is so far off from something like The Neverending Story. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? It has that same level of heart. I think the worst thing that happened to this movie is the score that people saw that went with this movie was not the score that worked the best for it. And I still stand by that.
Oh, okay.
Like, it changed the entire tone and tenor of the movie to have the cuts that originally they had on this. But we'll get to that when we get into movie talk. So I think we've all decided where we are on that one. Let's go ahead and take Tim, our review curation manager, for us a trip on what exactly the critics were saying at the time in 1985. And it seems like a little bit later for Legend. So here we go with 2 minutes with Tim.
2 minutes with Tim.
Tom Cruise's meteoric rise to superstardom in the 1980s goes something like this. He went from the brash newcomer of Risky Business and All the Right Moves to the box office champ of Top Gun, The Color of Money, and yes, Cocktail, to the serious actor of Rain Man and Born on the 4th of July. All of which makes Legend a genuine oddity in Tom Cruise's career ascent, his first sci-fi fantasy film, and his first commercial disappointment as a leading man. Debuting in the US a month before Top Gun, Legend was number one at the box office for 2 weeks, then proceeded to sink like a stone, ending up below even Howard the Duck in the year-end box office tally. And critics weren't exactly big fans either, largely finding Legend to be visually striking but narratively inert. Legend is rotten at 42% on the tomato meter with 45 reviews, and it has a 73% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review, William Wolfe of Gannett News Service wrote, "Its production design, special effects, and overall look can't be faulted. But its hackneyed story about good versus evil is so insipid and dull that no matter how much one might applaud the visual achievement, the movie is still a gigantic bore." However, in a fresh review, Roger Hurlbert of the South Florida Sun Sentinel wrote, "It's all flash and no flesh. But in the hands of a visual director like Scott, sometimes that's enough." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, Not even Ridley Scott's gorgeously realized set pieces can save Legend from its own tawdry tale, though it may be serviceable for those simply looking for fantasy eye candy. So that's Legend. Let's kick it back to Jacqueline and Mark, two people for whom this podcast holds more magic than any palace in the world. Back to you, folks.
Oh, my God. For all the shade you threw on this movie I love. Look at this. Just look at this right here. Look at these. This couple, and tell me that you do not want to fall in love with this.
Tim is just doing his job. He's reporting what the critics had to say.
You know what? You're going to get me like angrier than a Reddit poster about this. Because I love this movie. I think it is, yes, it is fantasy schlock. But at that time, what they were able to create, this was basically Tom Cruise, the production design folks, and Ridley Scott in a freaking like open air basement making this movie. And it still felt like you were going into this fantasy world. It still felt so immersive. And if you just give yourself over to it, I do think it's an impressive bit of world building.
There's things that I love about this movie that we'll talk about.
Yes, I was going to say. Yeah.
That I appreciate, but there's a lot that I just can't really get behind.
You know what? I do feel like this is one of those ones where like me and you are not so far apart on movies, and this is going to hurt me a lot. But you know what? We'll get to it in movie talk. So let's cue the music, Brian. No, this is good. We normally have a similar opinion, I think, on movies as far as where they need to be. And so for me to love this one so much and for you to basically treat it like a bologna sandwich, like it hurts.
It does feel like a bologna sandwich, though, in that I'm not getting the substance that I need out of this. There's so much in the world. I love the practical effects. I love the 80s look of it. I love that they basically built this forest in Pinewood Studios that was used for like a bunch of James Bond movies and stuff like that. That it does feel like its own universe, and that's so exciting. But I just, the actual storytelling, there's nothing to glom onto. There's nothing.
Yeah.
It's so easily good versus evil, so I know who I'm supposed to root for, but I'm not really sure why I'm pulling for any of these people. I didn't find anybody necessarily likable until my favorite character in the movie shows up. Gump the Elf.
Oh,
Gump comes
Gump's
in
your favorite?
Full Gump's. Of piss and vinegar and just ready to go. And like, I was ready to run through a brick wall for Gump.
Yeah,
nobody
Gump is
else.
Awesome. That's not the voice, obviously, of the actor. And I forget the voice actor that voiced that one. But that was something that they did later. Like they added in the voice.
Post-production.
Post-production.
You would have fooled me. Well done.
It was a Darth Vader moment. All right. So what did you specifically like about the film, Joe? Like what was your favorite part about it? And what maybe made you think like, I see why this is rotten.
I think Mark kind of hit on the head in terms of visually, this movie is almost unparalleled for the time it's in. I mean, when you look at movies like Willow and Dark Crystal, they all look cool. Neverending Story look cool. They have a very like nice fantasy element to it. But not like Legend. Legend feels like you're in this like wood forest with the sprites and elves, and it feels like you're, you know, with Big D in the darkness with him in his, you know, his castle. It really does feel like you're immersed in this world. But unlike its, you know, its cohorts at that time, it is the abstractness of it can be tough for some people, and I get that. I don't mind it. But there is no, like, princess saying you have this quest to go finish. You know, even there's not even that many, like, big sword fights. There's, like, maybe one big sword fight with some ogres.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, fairly tame in terms of, like, action. There's no big action set pieces. There's no horse, like, Neverending Story, you know, that dies in the Swamp of Sadness. Or there's
we watch a unicorn get...
I was going to say, we watch
rough.
A unicorn die.
But resurrected at some point.
Fair.
So, you know, there's, you know, that consequence is kind of gone.
But when the one unicorn is, like, just, like, doing laps around the other frozen one, oh, my God.
And then also, what happens to Lily? What happens to Lily is a death in a way. Like, her capture and her sort of, like, metamorphosis into... Look... I enjoy the simple fable aspect of it because, again, it is a fable about trust in the end. You know, it's the lesson that Jack learns at the very end of the movie that you're supposed to get to. No, it's not high stakes, but it's pretty and it's so much fun. And I do think a simple fable doesn't make it worse. Would I have liked to have seen a more complicated thoroughly realized, like completely rich, vivid idea of like exactly what you're fighting for. Sure. But the lack of that doesn't make me enjoy this any less.
It's more the lack of personality that I found that takes away from this movie. Because
I mean, Jack's personality or lack of.
Jack's got nothing going on, man.
There's nothing in the head over there.
And Lily's got very little going on as well. She just kind of loves traipsing around in the woods.
No, Lily has...
Ruining this unicorn's life for everybody. I want to touch the unicorn. Whoa! I just showed you where mythical unicorns live. Be happy with the bird's eye view. She's going to walk up to this thing and touch it. And
everything about her says that she was of her time an extreme rebel. Like everything, just her friendships, everything that she was doing. The one thing I will give you, as much as it pains me to say it, Tom Cruise is the Achilles heel of this.
There's nothing going on with the guy.
He is the Achilles heel of this tale. I do not doubt. I do not deny it. And I think that was also part of it. Is that imagine Will, you know what I mean? Like Will Smith or one of those big movie stars at the height of their power putting up a chunker like this. You know what I mean? Like this is like Jim Carrey when he did The Cable Guy. It doesn't matter if we look at it favorably later. It was not what people wanted of you.
And you look at Tom Cruise's Ascent, and obviously this movie comes out a month before Top Gun. And so I think that that's where people saw his trajectory going. But I mean, again, even now just putting eyes on this, I am such a fan of Tom Cruise and his filmography that this was like an exciting thing to hit play on because it's totally, I've never seen Tom Cruise like this before. And I don't necessarily blame him as a performer as much as I do. It really seems like he was handcuffed by the script and by the way the story's told is that they just give him nothing to work with. Like even Mowgli in the Jungle Book talking to animals had way more to do. Tarzan, way more to do.
Yeah.
And even you get to see a sense of where they're coming from. You get a sense of what their purpose is. I mean, just watching how frozen Jack was in this film when Lily starts to approach the unicorn and he's like terrified. He's like, no. But he doesn't run out and stop her. He's just sitting there, just kind of like spellbound, sitting on the toilet. And that's how I feel like his character is throughout this entire movie, is there's just nothing really for him to do other than just be this feral kid running around showing everybody the ropes.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Let's look at Ridley Scott at that time, though, because, like, this is the guy that was doing Blade Runner and Aliens. Those are not very talk. This was not his talky time of him being a director. He was the guy that put a journey of a solo sort of guy on his quest. You know what I mean? Like, that's what all of his movies were at that time. I don't know. What do you? I think that's more of a symptom of the way Ridley operates. I think you already said that, but I'm saying, like, the way Ridley wanted the story to tell. It wasn't that he didn't want it to have that. That's just not the type of movies he makes.
Well, it's interesting to note that in this, the chronology of Ridley Scott is that obviously, yeah, he had Alien in 79 and then he had Blade Runner in 82. He's on this movie, he's coming off of having shot that 1984 Apple commercial for the Super Bowl.
Oh,
Ridley Scott directed
that's right.
That.
So that's right.
This feels like something so violently different than what he just came from this scary overlord future selling computers to now, let's just get the hell away from everything that has to do with Earth.
Maybe.
How much of it is, yes, you know, Tom Cruise doing cartwheels in the woods is maybe fun for a little bit, but how much of it is that he's paired against Tim Curry, who is
living it up.
Maybe the best part about this movie.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And so, like, we get this, like, magnificent, really gargantuan performance from Tim Curry. And then we get Tom Cruise, you know, jumping over a sword and then maybe punching an ogre
in the
face.
I mean, do you think he even knew that, though? Because Tim Curry's, like, off to himself, just basically talking to the voice, which a lot of that was added. Wow. All of that was sort of, like, something that they came to later. Because I think originally in the script, there's a great featurette. I have several copies of this. A great featurette with Tim Curry. Well, first of all, they show his transformation and the, like, this is back in the old school makeup days when, like, that stuff, like, basically ate your face.
5 hours of makeup.
Yeah.
And I was reading a story that apparently, like, he got claustrophobic after, you know, days and weeks of doing this. He tried to get the makeup off too fast and ended up peeling some of his skin off, too.
Oh, yeah.
So he had to sit out for a week like, to let his skin grow back. Like, that's... The makeup was gnarly back then.
Like, they've gotten better now to where, like, these are less... In fact, I talked to the guys from Coming to America. Because they, obviously, in the first Coming to America, they all transformed and da-da-da. And then when they did the sequel, I was like, what's the biggest difference? And Arsenio told me, he's like, it doesn't hurt. He's like, that used to hurt. Like, you would take that off and you were down for, like, two days.
Yeah.
He's like, if you see why Simeon disappears so much, that was probably a day after I had to do the makeup. I was like... Yeah, Simeon kind of comes in and out.
They bled for those barbershops.
You know, they really did. And he's like, and that's the reason why also, you know, you see Eddie, all of his stuff was filmed at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well, I mean, we look at the movie, even in like, if they're not in the same room, you just get this like really great performance from Tim Curry. I also really like the Goblins. Yeah. We'll have to talk about them in a second, maybe, or now.
They had a good time.
They did. I was going to say, like, favorite characters. No, go right
really
ahead.
Wish I knew what happened to them. Plix and Plunder. We know what happens to Plunder, but Plix and Pox, I think is the other one. They're just gone. I mean, you're the legend expert. If you could give me some insight on where they go.
What happens to, I think they get into that last fight and then they kind of, they're a boss that got defeated. Like they're off, you know, kind of licking their wounds.
I really miss them. They were really fun. But it's just, we get this movie with all these really fun characters. You know, the goblins, the elves, Gump, and what's the other one's names? I always forget, like Murphy Brown or Tom Brown or.
Brown Tom.
Yeah. Close, you know. Yeah. All these interesting.
I literally was thinking, I was like, Tom Brown, the clothing line. That was so hilarious.
It's funny because the movie that this beat opening weekend of the box office, because as Tim said, it did have a nice couple weeks there at number one. It beat a movie called Murphy's Law, I think.
Oh, really? Interesting.
That was the other new movie of the week. And then you had the 80s were just a great time for screwball comedies, kids. The Money Pit, Police Academy 3. And there was and Gung Ho starring Michael Keaton.
Wow.
Rounded out the top five opening weekend of this movie. However, those three comedies I just listed all had bigger runs at the box office.
Yeah.
They all made more because Legend only pulled in about $15 million.
No, it only pulled in $15 million for a $24 million budget. All of that was in props, production, and set design because obviously they were not. The other thing I think about this one, you think about Ridley Scott and how much he's known for like big action sequences or whatever. That is really what got hamstringed by this budget of this movie. Mm. Like they couldn't really invest in the stunt performers or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like that was missing? Would you have liked to have seen a more action heavy version of this? Because I didn't. But then I look at something like Willow, where like Val Kilmer is basically turned into an acrobat, you know, and I'm like, that would have been fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I don't think it's like the biggest detriment to this movie. I think it adds to it, especially when you compare it to something like Willow or, you know, the other movie, Princess Bride, which is, you know, really heavy in the swordplay. It would have been fun to see a little bit more action because the majority of the action is Tom Cruise jumping over a sword, then punching an ogre in the face, and then running around. It feels like everybody's kind of running around with their heads cut off for a few seconds.
I am actually, I didn't need more action in this. I just needed a little more direction because I felt like I was put in the middle of this world, and I almost felt like I was a tourist, just kind of like looking at an exhibit.
Do you
and
care
like,
where Cinderella is?
Whenever I'm done, I can just leave, and like nobody's going to care either. Like I was just kind of observing being here. And I'm sorry, I know these are big stakes here. I know we're dealing with the light and the whole light of the universe.
The universe
is in these two steeds, and we gotta at least keep one of them alive. I never really felt like darkness taking over would have been the worst thing. It seemed like they were having a good time.
Oh my God!
They were having a good time down there.
It might be the Billy Joel, I'd rather laugh with the sinners and cry with the saints. The saints ain't having a lot of fun in this movie. The one saint that tried to do something fun was Mia Sara.
Yeah.
And by touching a unicorn, we saw how that worked out. So I might just be on team darkness here.
No.
I could be a good goblin.
What about the cool place where like they go and they have like the, what's the word I'm looking for, like with the baking and the nice lady
it's
and all
beautiful.
Of that. You know?
The whole thing is beautiful. And again, Team Elf, because I really thought when the elves showed up, I at least got a little kick. I got some juice going again because those elves are, those elves do not mess around. They're on missions, man.
What did you think about horny Una? Una is a romance novelist at heart, because let me tell you,
that's why you love this movie.
Only in romance novels, in the middle of those perilous situations, would the girl be like,
Kiss me,
Jack.
I figured it out. Joe, we solved the riddle. I figured it out. Not only why Jacqueline loves this movie, why she adores it so much, there's a tattoo on her body of said movie, is that you take this globe that they put us in, and there's so much room. There's rich, fertile soil for your romantic
fan
novels that you read at the beach to grow from here.
I mean, I read them everywhere.
I know.
Listen, and honestly, yes, the fantasy genre that I was first exposed to was very much like bodice rippers with wizards.
Are we sure it's not an Una tattoo on your back?
No, I am not Una. No, not her. We are so much better.
You know this movie? This movie is basically a 90-minute version of that scene in Step Brothers where she's imagining running into John C. Reilly as a centaur in the woods somewhere. That's what this movie is to me.
Maybe.
You know what? I would write it better if that was the case. It would be way, way more detailed. I will tell you, wouldn't have problems with that plot. No.
I'm watching this movie and I'm thinking, like, because I always like to be like, okay, was there a specific audience in mind geared for this?
Yes.
Because it may not be the 43-year-old dude that I currently am watching this. And so, like you were saying, Joe, we all have that phase, at least when we're kids. A lot of folks as adults, too, love these kind of movies. And I'm not expecting, like, a sweeping scope epic film like A Lord of the Rings when I put this on. But I'm thinking, like, I don't know that kids would have really signed up for this because it's not necessarily slow. It's not plotting. He-Man didn't do well. I mean, they totally butchered He-Man, as we talked
but
about.
But no, but is this the same time?
Yeah,
He-Man
was 87, and you also have Billy Barty starring in both this and He-Man. Billy Barty's best role in the mid-80s, though, is unfortunately neither one of these movies. It's playing Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah.
Because that's everybody knows the Rumpelstiltskin story. Kids are going to show up to that, as opposed to Masters of the Universe, which doesn't take the lore seriously at all. And then here, where we're building lore, but we're not really using a lot of excitement with our protagonist to do it with.
Your love of this movie is so
I just couldn't
great.
Find a protagonist
you know what?
To get behind.
You know what?
I'm rooting for Tim Curry.
You're rooting for Tim.
Rooting for darkness, baby.
It's
Big
not
G.
the couple. It's not the couple, like the mare and the stallion, or like Jack. And
give me Tim Curry and his host of goblins and minions all day long.
That's like Jack Sparrow and the couple from Pirates of the Caribbean. There's the villain and then there's the young couple. How do you not understand this?
Okay, if this couple here, if Lily and Jack had a tenth of the personality,
the chemistry,
any of the relationships we've seen in Pirates
you
of the
may
Caribbean.
Not have, one may not have had personality. She had personality. They had chemistry. It's just he didn't have singular
Did they
personality.
Last? Do you think they last?
Well, what cut are we talking about? Which ending?
Well, I mean,
oh, yeah.
Because there is the director's cut. Which I'm told is different. And that's the...
Oh, well, yeah.
It's like 20 more minutes.
Yes.
Tom Cruise has said, that, like, look, if you're going to see Legend, see the director. I think Ridley Scott has said the same thing. So they both really endorse that version more than the one that I saw.
Go ahead with the director's cut. I'm very curious on your thoughts on it.
So the director's cut, the big difference is that in the original cut, they end up together. Very classic fairy tale ending. Yeah. They kiss, they're together, the end, credits roll. Director's cut.
She gets her comeuppance more.
She wakes up. She's like, oh, it's a dream. She's like, you know what? Yeah. We're not really alike at all.
Yeah.
You go back and do cartwheels in the forest. I'm going to go do my own thing.
There you go.
Yeah.
And that's how it ends, which I think is a much more appropriate ending for this movie.
It's much more real, honey, because she was just messing around with the other with the kid from the other side of the tracks. Let's be honest.
I would say it to this.
She was just having her thrills before she gets married to some boring guy.
Sure. Hey, let her do what she wants.
This is what I was saying. She's always been a rebel, and that was this whole adventure shows her comeuppance for trying to be a rebel. Like all of the death and destruction that she caused. That's what I look at it as. She plays this out in her head and sees if I keep trying to rebel, this is what I'm going to end up doing. Like a fish and a cat can fall in love, but where do they build their house type of situation? Like she, it's very like La La Land.
I've never heard that one before.
Did you just make that up?
I might be taking that from
a fish
you.
And a cat can fall in love, but where do they build their house? Or fish and a bird is another
that,
one.
No, that's yeah. so, keep it fish and cat. That is so deep. I mean, just, like, I don't know where they built.
Where do they build their house?
Anyway. I care more about the fish and the cat than I do Will and Jill.
Yeah, more chemistry.
So, this is like not my saying. The internet is going to be like, she's passing this off like she is so brilliant. My grandma's been saying that since God was a boy. Anyway, listen, I do think that that's exactly what she does. She realizes sort of like the folly of her, because this girl is like, again, maybe I've read too many period pieces, but I realize she is an unwed woman out in the middle of nowhere. That is danger, danger, Dr. Spock. She's doing all kinds of things. She's not frolicking with a little boy in the forest.
Especially scandals. Back then, because she's running. I never really understood towards the beginning of the movie when she goes to this little village and she's visiting with Nell. And she like messes with Nell's laundry to like distract her. So she can like go like eat a biscuit, but then Nell comes in and she's like, and they're friends. I'm like, why are you distracted?
She's like the lady.
Why are you making life harder for everybody?
So there's like a big lord on the castle, and she's either the daughter or one of the ladies. She's of importance. She's one of those people. And this is
she's gonna be assigned to marry some duke or noble, and it's not gonna be Jack.
Yeah. This girl is just like the village chick, and Jack is basically like the dude from Titanic. How can y'all get into Titanic
which
and not
dude,
like
see- which dude from Titanic?
Jack. From Titanic.
Oh, Jack is Jack from Titanic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like it's like literally the same story is like that. And y'all buy that. We need to have a disaster in the middle. The boat has to sink.
Are we comparing Tom Cruise's chemistry in this movie with Kate Winslet?
Yeah. I'm just defending this so hard. But that's literally the same
this is
idea.
The point
like
we reached.
The rich girl. But you say like you didn't know what this is. I'm like, there's plenty of movies that this mirrors that you've witnessed.
I'll give you Twilight because I feel like this could have been like marketed Twilight. Towards a similar demographic as Twilight. Because yes. Twilight was going after, you know, obviously everybody who read the book, but also trying to get like that teenage demo in.
Yeah.
And I feel like you could have had that if there was more sparks or even just like more exchanges between Jack and Lily. Like their relationship never got to that level where it even felt marketable to anyone.
It's a 73% audience score. Like people are with me on this.
I know. I'm not saying that I'm the
you know
majority
what?
Opinion.
Know what it is. This movie went to also, I want to talk about why this movie got the receptions that it did, because it did so many dumb things. First of all, they locked Ridley out of the edit bay.
Never a good idea.
The story of the drama of which score is supposed to be attached to this movie is like worse than like Joan Crawford and Davis. It's like crazy feud type stuff. The original score that the studio wanted was with Jerry Goldsmith.
Right.
The score with Tangerine Dream, because he's the more established, like, this guy
Tangerine
makes
Dream.
Movie. But the Tangerine Dream one more fits to the ethereal sort of like fairy tale aspect of the entire picture. Also, when they were doing the whole debate about what the director's cut was going to be versus what the theatrical cut was going to be, the theatrical cut is the one with Tangerine Dream because Jerry wouldn't go back and do the crappy, like, shorter version
right.
that they wanted to do for that. And so I think the Tangerine Dream is the actual better score, and I do think the studio was right on that. It just unfortunately underscores the worst story.
And the director wasn't on board with that cut, and so now you have a cut that was originally over 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then it kept getting trimmed down to the point where they were testing it, and it just kept getting shorter and shorter and shorter until it got to, like, this 89, 90-minute runtime. And look, that's more than enough time for me anyway to build a world, because what I appreciate about this is that it's pretty much Ridley Scott's imagination.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to build this myth from scratch, right? And I don't need like built-in IP to go see a movie and enjoy it. But I feel like a lot of the elements of this were half-baked, where it wasn't fully fleshed out. Which, granted, again, you're building something new. You don't really know what you have. I'm not sure how long it took for Tolkien or Lucas to like create their worlds.
A lot longer than this.
Yeah, I would bet.
Right.
A lot. No, he didn't have respect for the world building. He didn't have respect for the storytelling you had to put towards that world building. He just wanted the visuals to tell.
Took
all
the Bible
this.
A while to get written, you know?
A while.
And even that mythology.
Well,
sometimes there's questions.
I think you could say it's a little bit derivative in terms of its, you know, story. There's nothing about it that's uniquely legend, maybe like the Lord of Darkness, but very simple. You have a wild boy, the innocent girl, and evil. You know, unlike, you know, something like Neverending Story, where you have like at least a bunch of creatures. You have a guy who's a mountain.
They
you
bring
have
out a dragon lady out of the water. There's plenty of people that pop up.
She's a hag. She's a hag, a swamp hag, which is, I think, also very just, you know, derivative of fairy tales. But it's really small scale compared to so much of its peers, which I think it's just unfortunate that it gets compared so much to all these fantasy movies, because compared to everything else, it's tiny. You know, you get this little, you get two settings, really.
If I went to a nice, fun, exciting restaurant, I went to Rainforest Cafe, right? And I'm there with Joe and Jacqueline, my dear friends. I'm going to have a great time because the restaurant's cool and the company's great. This is going to Rainforest Cafe with two of the most boring people you could possibly meet. And the one is making very questionable decisions and the other one is just there. And I'm like, yeah, it's cool being at Rainforest Cafe. Like, I like looking at all the stuff. Yeah. I'm not having a good time at this table. The environment I'm in is cool, but at the actual table, the bill can't get here fast enough.
Wow.
Man, that's a lot to be said.
What an
analogy.
We
have to get out of here on the movie talk section, because we honestly, I feel like I try to be convincing Mark of the merits of this movie for forever. And
get a tattoo of Gump the Elf. That's how much I like Gump.
Gump had a look. He was
fresh
served,
injection of energy into this movie.
Serving and absolutely fierce. The other thing I will say we didn't necessarily talk about, which is whether or not this can be remade. I'm just going to go ahead and give us our thing. No, because Tim Curry was too good and nobody is going to like try to top that, both in like the shape of his face and everything that he did in that. Nobody's going to try and do Darkness.
You imagine how weird it would be if they remade this movie, but like they had Tom Cruise make a cameo.
Oh my God, no.
If Willow can't be successful and if Dark Crystal can't be successful with remakes, there's no world where Legend gets a remake and is successful.
The one movie I would say maybe like still has that sort of name brand value would be Labyrinth. From this time.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's been talks about it. I prefer to leave Labyrinth where it is, because
it's a dangerous game.
Hard to recreate David Bowie and Jennifer Connelly and the magic of that movie. And again, Labyrinth is great.
Yeah.
Like if I was looking at something like Legend, I'd be like, yeah, you can punch that up a little bit. Labyrinth is pretty much perfect as is.
I mean, you say that, but I would just remind you, yesterday I looked at a new trailer for Wonka. So
whoa. Fighting Wonka right now?
No. I'm saying that like I thought that role was untouchable and that they would never ever try to remake it and do anything else with it. Like, it's just,
that deep into...
In Paul King, I trust.
Wonka, okay.
Look, the guy made Paddington, and I know you guys want to worship him, but I want to remind you, Brad Bird made some of the greatest animated movies ever, and the minute he tried to make a live action, it did not go well. So, that is going to be it for movie talk. We're going to bring it over to open up our mailbag.
That's a good movie talk.
It's a good movie talk.
I've got a little contentious there.
You know what?
A lot of opinions flying around.
There's passion.
Says the guy who brought the contention.
You know what, though? You know? It's actually good because, again, very rare that we don't like have at least, I think, a similar opinion, but it's okay.
I'm happy to be the darkness of this episode.
Wow.
I mean, let's just get some Van Halen concert movies out here where we can really have a real debate on whose passion will come through.
All right,
here we go. From Ketchup Crew member Brian Catlazan. Sorry, Brian, if I got that wrong.
Castellan.
Okay, Castellan. Good one. Mark and Jacqueline, I'm a devoted member of the Ketchup Crew, and I wanted to suggest The Good Son from 93,
yes.
Creepy Macaulay. Yes, this movie that has haunted me my entire life and made a lasting impression. It doesn't sit right with me that as a 25% critic score, 54% audience score, I can't be the only one to get behind this classic. I think people weren't ready for Macaulay as an Omen-type kid coming off the Home Alone movies. Hope this movie could get a reprisal on RT is Wrong. Love the podcast and appreciate your time. Brian, I agree. I'm with you on that one.
25%? I can't believe The Good Son is that lowly rated.
Another Jim Carrey moment. They wanted him in other things. Like, you don't make the cute kid kill people.
Okay, so I saw The Good Son in theaters
when
it came out. And I was like, you know, 12 or 13. I was like, maybe a year older than Macaulay himself. And you knew that it was going to be something different. Like, nobody's walking into that movie like hoping to get yucks. You knew that this was like a twist and a turn. And that's what we were excited about. And I crap y'all not. I was explaining the ending of this movie to a couple of my friends at the gym that I work out at. And they'd never seen it. They'd never heard of it. And I was explaining how the ending plays out. And their jaws were on the floor. And I'm not that good of a storyteller. That's just like how this movie ends up. It's just like, one of the all-time conundrums. Has Cinema Joe seen this?
I actually have not seen
the
good
stuff. I've seen it, but I don't remember the ending. The only thing I remember...
You remember the ending?
I don't remember the ending. The only thing I remember was Trick or Treat. I remember Trick or Treat, and I remember him like faking that he wasn't going to pull him up. And I remember that Elijah Wood out-cuted Macaulay Culkin in it, which is a hard thing to do. Like,
yeah, Elijah Wood is pretty cute.
He was so like... I was like, oh, you had to find a kid more adorable than Macaulay, and you did.
All right, we might have to get this on the docket, Brian. We might have to have Cinema Joe come back. He's never seen it.
I didn't know. I'm going in blind.
Great recommendation, Brian. Cinema Joe, sir, thank you so much for coming back. I really do appreciate it. Anywhere folks can find you, why don't you let us know?
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm glad we got to talk about Legend and how good it is. I'm still on the pro side. It may seem like I was on the contentious side. Yeah. I'm still pro Legend.
It has warts, but I just don't care because I love it.
Yeah.
That's beauty marks.
But yeah, you can find me on social media, Cinema Joe on all social media handles, and my podcast, House Cinema Podcast, on all podcast applications.
All right, so tattoos. What's Jacqueline's got a movie themed tattoo.
All of mine are movie themed.
Okay. What's the forearm one looks.
So this one is from Everything Everywhere Once. I said on Twitter I would get it tattooed if Michelle Yeoh won Best Actress. And the internet caught it, so I was like, well, I can't not get it now. So I got it. I got Tron Legacy here. I'm a big Tron guy.
Nice, okay.
Big Tron guy. My first tattoo is Interstellar, just the Morse code. It was a random night in Portland.
That's fun.
Nice.
Then we got Arrival over here. Big Arrival fan. Drive, and it just goes up. Got The Shining up there. Old Boy up here.
Damn.
Wow.
See, now I feel left. I want to get a movie tattoo. What's my movie theme tattoo?
A Legend.
You should.
Yeah, Legend.
No,
I'll get Gump on the shoulder, right?
You might. No, I have a Legend. The one I want to get is the only one that I would get with color, and that's Heather's.
Oh.
Okay.
Is there like a scene or a person?
Croquet. And very good. Blue scrunchie.
All right.
That's good.
Yeah, just like everything in black and white except for the red croquet and the blue scrunchie.
I might do a sleeve, and it's just going to be Christian Slater through the years.
There you go.
That's what I'm going to do. I love CS, man.
Absolutely insane. All right. Real quick, since you are definitely Cinema Joe, I'm sure you have some cinema to recommend. Is there anything you want to recommend, sir?
Yes, of course. So by the time this episode releases, the world, I'm hoping, is seeing Killers of the Flower Moon. If you're not, don't be scared of the runtime. Yes, it's long. It goes by quick, I think so. There are some timely bathroom breaks you can take, but go see it.
All right.
I would say don't wait for Apple TV. Go see it in theaters.
I think that's a good recommendation, especially since that's the way Scorsese shot it and wants it to be seen.
Exactly.
Feel like he prefers you go see it.
Exactly.
I do think he definitely does. I think I may have read that somewhere.
Yeah.
Just anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I saw that one at Cannes. It is definitely going to be a huge one, a part of the conversation. I'm wishing Lily the best of luck.
Did you see When Evil Lurks at Fantastic Fest?
I saw it before then, because that was also, I think, at Cannes.
I think it was at TIFF. TIFF.
Sorry. Yeah, it was TIFF.
If you need a spooky recommendation, When Evil Lurks will hit Shudder on the 27th.
Mm-hmm.
Best horror movie of the year. I'll say that right now.
I agree. Although I will say the best horror show that I was watching was House of Usher. I also loved House of Usher.
I haven't started it yet.
House of Usher.
Yeah, maybe I'll book myself a room at the Equinox Hotel for a weekend and just do nothing but binge watch that.
Halloween weekend, if you want to set yourself up with some, I know you like to get the spooky beers.
Yeah. Oh,
get your spooky beer.
Oh, yeah.
You put on the House of Usher.
Yeah,
get yourself some candy corn popcorn. You'll be
don't do that part.
At home. Yeah. Well, that's like Halloween, you know.
I'm a candy corn
Halloween
guy.
Park.
I got no problem with candy corn.
Same. Well, I knew this. Again, we've been doing this a little while. I know.
Yeah.
We had somebody else disgusted by our lack of candy corn.
Yeah. It was great talking to you guys.
I know, it was great talking to you too,
awesome
sir.
Seeing you. Thank you so much.
Thank you again. On behalf of Brian Perez, Mark Ellis, of course, Cinema Joe, please check him out on his podcast, and our entire Rotten Tomatoes crew. Mark, what are we talking about next week?
Well, you talk about personality. We're going Adam's Family Values.
Very nice.
Adam's Family.
An all-time banger, just like MC Hammer's theme for the first movie was. Yeah. Then we're going to 1993 for that one. Adam's Family Values. Cannot wait to talk about this movie.
Absolutely. This is definitely putting us right in the spooky coming up on Thanksgiving season.
Yeah.
That's exactly where it should be. That's it for us this week on Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. We will see you all next week. Bye-bye.